Good morning, this is a Scoop audio interview, and today we're chatting to John Stevenson, who's in Pakistan investigating what's happening post the quake. John, the quake was a couple of months ago. What's the situation like now? I understand you were actually in Pakistan a month or so back prior to winter.
Well, yes, I was there a month ago, and I think it's fair to say that the situation has improved quite considerably. When I was here a month ago, there was still the prospect of winter facing all the people who had been affected by the quake, and of course, it's a very mountainous region of Pakistan, Kashmir and the Northwest Frontier Province, and around 3.5 million people were affected by the quake. I think estimates vary, but probably around 87,000 people are believed to have died, more than 130,000 injured, many of them seriously, and the survivors essentially were, many of them were in the mountains, and facing the prospect of a very bleak Himalayan winter. And the massive operation launch called Operation Winterization, trying to get shelter, food, medical supplies up to many of these people. A lot of them stayed up in the mountains. They didn't come down for a
variety
of reasons.
Why was it exactly they stayed up in the mountains, sorry? Why did they stay up?
Well, a variety of reasons. Some of them are very religiously and culturally conservative. They didn't want to come down to sort of the tented camps that were set up by the United Nations. Some of them were unable to bring down livestock and worried they would. Others were worried that they wouldn't get compensation if they came down from their mountain villages because the government would think that they were okay. And they're also very hardy people who are used to fairly bleak winters, and I think many of them thought that they could ride the situation out, and they have. But there was also a problem with land ownership. Many of them are tenants who thought they would lose their land to the people who own it if they came down. These are people who rent or pay a proportion of their income from their land to the Hans, and some of them don't have ownership papers, they don't have titles. They felt that if they came down, the Hans would repossess the land and they would lose their claim to it. So a variety of reasons, but the operation winterization, I think it's fair to say, was fairly successful. There was a very big focus on airlifting corrugated iron sheets, on airlifting food, as I said, and medical supplies, and people were able to, for the most part, ride out the winter thanks to a very, very mild winter, helped by a very mild winter. I think it's fair to say if it hadn't been so mild, many of them might have died, but it's been an almost miraculously mild winter. A couple of thick, heavy snowfalls, but by and large, people are now moving from the survival stage, the initial relief stage, to sort of thinking more about reconstruction now.
So when you say that things have improved, what you mean is it hasn't actually necessarily improved in the government or the Pakistani aid side of it or overseas aid. You're saying that it's improved because the winter wasn't that bad?
No, it was helped by the fact that the winter was... Aid essentially was far from perfect, I think it's fair to say, and there was a lot of criticism of the UN for its slow response. It was said that, for example, they only had a few people on the ground a month after the quake in some areas compared to the hundreds that they had on the ground in Banda Aceh after the tsunami. But the UN did get a lot of criticism. I think it was slow to react, probably, it's fair to say, but certainly worked hard to make up for lost ground. And the aid agencies and NGOs that work there's a huge mix from Pakistan, military, the Red Cross, the Red Crescent, religious charities, international organisation of migration, and even Mujahideen groups that operate in Kashmir. They all work together, a very unusual potpourri of groups, but they work very, very hard, and I think that without that incredible courage and compassion on the part of a lot of groups, the situation would have been much harder, and as I say, all helped by a very mild winter.
When you say Mujahideen groups, I understand some of them were actually banned and they were sort of helping right from the start. Could you expand on that a little bit?
Yes, many of them are banned. Some of them are not banned. They're religious charities that are very closely linked to
Are they banned by the UN or the US, or who exactly banned them?
No, it's not a ban by the Pakistan government itself in the wake of September 11th. You know, some of the groups, one for example, that's associated with the group Laskar-e-Taiba, which is one of the two main Kashmiri separatist groups that are fighting the Indian-occupied and Indian-occupied Kashmir. They were groups, one of the groups which is essentially a front for Laskar-e-Taiba was banned, and that's done a lot of good work here. In fact, they've even been acknowledged by President Musharraf himself. I think they were very quick to react. They were in the area. They know the area well, and part of their, I guess, their support for the community was paying back the support that they had received themselves as guerrilla groups in the area. So they were very quick to get in there, bury the dead, help survivors, and they earned a lot of goodwill, particularly as the Pakistan army was fairly badly pummeled in places itself, and in some cases, you know, a little bit slow to react. The Pakistan Army, of course, is one of the few working organisations in Pakistan, and it's done a lot of good work since the initial days. That's a little bit of time in some cases to recover. So it's done some great work, and it's been described as the backbone of the operation, and it's certainly very active now. The areas that I've been in the last couple of days up in Northwest Frontier Province doing an incredible job and keeping order, gathering statistics, distributing food, and you know, they've really done, I think, a very impressive job, indeed, and got a lot of praise from NGOs, foreign NGOs.
Pakistan hasn't been much in the news in the last few weeks in New Zealand, other than perhaps a couple of articles by myself. But I was just wondering, over in Pakistan, I mean, is the quake still big news, or is the India versus Pakistan cricket matches, is that sort of taking over? I mean, what's the actual news value of this over where you are?
I think any time there's a cricket series in Pakistan, there's going to be a lot of attention focused on it. I saw a huge number of people clustered around televisions in malls and shopping centres yesterday here in Islamabad, but certainly the quake is big news here. It's just affected so many people. As I say, you know, around 3.5 million people affected, something like 500,000 families, and apart from the dead, who, of course, nothing can be done for them, there's a huge job facing Pakistan in terms of reconstruction. I mean, it's a massive operation that's going to be required to rebuild all these homes, to clear the rubble. There's just rubble everywhere in many areas, particularly some of the cities like Balakot and Musafirabad. There are massive landslides which have wiped out roads, sort of obstructed highways, and all that's going to be cleared away. Some of it's been done already, but there's a huge amount that remains to be done. There could be another heavy snowfall in February, or a couple of snowfalls, but essentially people are now moving, as I said, from the survival and the relief, initial relief stage, to thinking about reconstruction. And there's a need to rebuild homes, of course. There's a lot of focus on that. Then things, schools, hospitals, community centres. There's the question of compensation, money to be distributed, and a huge range of organisations involved, and the aid agencies, as I say, by and large, doing an amazing job. I was up in the Karen Valley, which is an area of Northwest Frontier Province, and I saw the work that Oxfam and World Vision was doing in a neighbouring valley, Sirim Valley. Very, very humbling to see the amount of work that's been done here, and just the incredible commitment that these people have. A lot of people ask whether aid money is being well spent, and I can only say from everything that I've seen it is. The stuff that's being distributed is being done very professionally. A lot of work being done on water and sanitation, particularly in the camps, which is very, very important, particularly as summer approaches and the warmer weather approaches, temperatures rise, and there's a great concern about disease. There's been a lot of respiratory tract infections, a lot of cold weather-related diseases, and all these things are certainly a problem. But I think it's fair to say that despite the fact that it's very uncomfortable for many people, still quite cold here in the nights, particularly up in the valleys, in the mountains, and we're talking in some cases 5,000 to 6,000 feet, even as high as 8,000 or 9,000 feet, where people have remained in the mountains. There's a lot of work to be done. Distributing stoves, distributing beds.
Actually, that's a point. What about people who have set themselves on fire? Is that still a problem? Was that just a sort of random news reports of tents burning down? And is that
I don't think it was random, but it certainly wasn't, prevalent. It certainly wasn't widespread. You know, these are people who were facing, very, very low temperatures. Temperatures can drop as low as minus 10, minus 20 here in the winter. And those are people who are just desperate. Obviously, lighting fires or stoves in a tent is not a, not an ideal situation. But those people were desperate, and some of them, in some cases, they burned down. I don't know the total numbers, but it certainly wasn't in the hundreds. But as I said, we're almost through the winter here now. Almost miraculously, the weather has been very mild, and they're starting to look, as I said, towards the reconstruction stage. But no one is complacent here. I spoke to the UN, and they're complacent about the work that needs to be done to bring people through the winter. A lot of people, a lot of families clustered together in these tent camps only have, for example, three blankets for a family of eight, or only one bed in many cases in some of the camps. And, there's still some logistical problems with getting food, getting water, getting sanitation set up. But by and large, as I say, looking towards the reconstruction phase now, and yet plenty of work to be done there, a huge task, mammoth task, could be years.